I would like to ask mechila, that means forgiveness, for anybody who I will scare, or because tonight's shir is a pretty heavy shir, and you know, usually I give you this warning and like, you know, I'm joking around. Tonight I'm very serious. Anybody who gets nightmares or gets scared of certain things, I think that when I start talking about the other world, for your own sake, if it gets a little bit scary, don't be ashamed to walk out. I won't look at it like you're walking out on my shir. But it's a very heavy shir, and I feel that I need to talk about it because we're in the summer months, and Hashem should help that we should have siyata d'shamayah, that it should come out correctly. Okay, that's the warning. Now I can say whatever I want. Okay, this week's parsha is Parshas Matos. Parshas Matos, in the beginning of the parsha, talks about promises. Halacha, and a person makes a shvua, he swears, or he makes a promise. I'd like to also make a special welcome to a very special girl who's here tonight, who hasn't been here for a while, Elisheva Dina, wherever you are. Thank you for showing up. Anyway, so the Chumash begins to talk about a shvua and a neder, and if a person makes a shvua and a neder, he has a right to go to three rabbis, and he can be, there's a heter of a neder and a mefer of a neder. If a woman makes a promise, her husband that day that he hears that she made the promise has the koyach to break it. Say mufalach, mufalach, or mutalach, mutalach, depending if she went to three rabbis. He has that power, and then of course after that, if he didn't break it, then it stays the same. But there's a lot of halachas in this week's, the whole Masechtas Nedarim, about promises. But I'd like to tell you a story about a person whose promises, whose words, and the importance of the words that come out of a person's mouth. We know that the difference between a human being and an animal is dibor. An animal is called chai, we're called a medaber. The difference between us and animals is that we're able to speak. And speech is a very great present. It's a very great presence, it's a means of communications. But we also know that speech is a huge weapon. You know, even the Iranians, their new nuclear missile that they tested goes 1,250 miles. A person's mouth can go across the world. You can sit in here tonight and talk Lashon Hara about a girl who lives in Israel, 5,000 miles from here, and totally destroy her. 5,000 miles, they don't have a missile that goes 5,000 miles, they don't have a bullet that goes 5,000 miles. But a person's words can carry, not only that, a person's words can go to the next world, which is billions and zillions of miles away. You can talk Lashon Hara about someone who died and destroy their name. They could have had a good name, and you're telling your friend, all that stuff they said by his Levaya, let me tell you a story about him, and destroy him. And he's sitting in the next world. A person's mouth is the most powerful weapon that there is in the world. The President of the United States says, push the button. They push the button. It's a nuclear war. A person's mouth says, Hariyat Mekudeshesli. And when he says, Hariyat Mekudeshesli, they were single, now they're married. A person's mouth is a very powerful thing. A yes, a no, makes decisions of life and death. So the reason Hashem gave us two guards on our mouth is because it's the most powerful aver. Most powerful organ in a human body is your mouth. Your eyes have an eyelid, your ears have an earlobe. Your mouth has two guards. It has lips and teeth. Why? Because that is the most powerful organ in a person's body. There's a famous, interesting story brought down where the body, a human body, was having a fight. And each organ said, I'm more important than you. The hand said, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be able to eat. The foot said, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't be able to walk. The heart said, if it wasn't for me, there'd be no blood. The brain said, it wouldn't think. The eye said, it wouldn't see. They're having a big mouth like us. And the mouth said, I'm the most powerful. And they all laughed at him. What do? Big deal. You eat, you talk. The end of the world. He says, yeah, okay. So they went in front of this person, went in front of the king. And they're having this argument in the body. Who's the most powerful? Who's the most important? And all of a sudden, the mouth said to the king, something extremely chutzpah, something extremely fresh. And when it came out of this person's mouth, the king said, the punishment for that statement you just made is death. Take him and hang him in the gallows. And the mouth turned to the rest of the body and said, no. So who's the most powerful? Now there's going to be no hand, there's going to be no foot, there's going to be no brains, there's going to be no eyes. You see, I have the power of life and death. Now, because I said this to the king, you're done. The rest of the body is done. And of course, the rest of the body said, you know what, you're right, the power of the mouth. You can get me killed, you can get me life. And as the end of the marshal goes, he went back to the king and he complimented him and he said he didn't mean it. And he got him out of it. And the mouth said, you see, I can bring you death, I can give you life. Life and death is in Dibor, it's in a person's mouth. A person has to be very careful. This week's Pasha talks about Nedarim and Shvuos, about a person talking. A person has to be so careful what comes out of his mouth. There was a very great tzaddik, and Rav Shadron says this story, and he was a very big maggid. He used to go around the whole Eretz Yisrael, he used to tell stories, and he used to make people do tshuva. And then one day he turned to his grandsons and he said, that's it, I'm not speaking anymore. No more speeches, no more stories, no more mussar, no, that's it, I'm done. His grandson said, Zaidi, what happened? You don't feel well? He said, no, I feel well. He said, what happened? Why did you want to go speak? It's because last night my last tooth fell out. So your last tooth fell out? He said, yes. Now I only have in my body one guard for my mouth, and that's my lips. And I don't trust one guard on the mouth. And he never spoke again in public. Now you might ask, why didn't he put fake teeth in? Right? It's not Akasha. He felt that the guards that were given naturally from Hashem, one of them was gone. He never got up and spoke publicly anymore. Rav Shadron says that was the story. A famous maggid, he stopped when he lost one guard. You can imagine. And already what was coming out of his mouth? He said, I only have one guard, I only have lips, I can't speak publicly. All right, I'm hoping Hashem will keep my teeth for a while anyway. So the mouth is very powerful. It's a ridiculous story, an amazing story brought down in the Avos Chaim. And he says like this. There was a famous rabbi, his name was Rabbi Yitzchak Levi Mibaditchev. He was a famous rabbi, he always protected the Jews, he always said good about the Jews no matter what happened. And he was a Maya. And he had a minute that he did a bris milah the first in the morning, he didn't wait for the mitzvah. The minute they finished davening, he would do the bris milah. One day, he had a grandson. And his son-in-law said to him, you know, you gotta come and do the bris. So he came to do the bris. And they finished davening, and Rav Yitzchak Levi said, I gotta go into my room for 2 minutes. I'll be out in a few minutes. They were surprised. He always used to do the bris right away. But if that's what the Rebbe wants to do, that's what the Rebbe does. And so he went into his room, and it was 5 minutes and a half an hour and an hour and an hour and a half and 2 hours and 3 hours and 4 hours. Everybody that came to the bris already left. They all went to work. And there was mamish, just the minion left. And finally he came out of the room, and he did the bris milah. And all the chassidim, the few chassidim that were left, were wondering. He usually does it right away, and he made us wait for 4 hours, but they didn't ask him anything. They came to naming the child. So when they name the child, you always bend down to the father, and he tells you the name, and the person who's naming the child says the name. Rabbi Ditchev was giving the name, but he never bent down to his son-in-law. He never asked him what name he wants to give. And he said, V'kara shma b'Yisrael Yehuda Leib. His name is Yehuda Leib. And his son-in-law was very upset and very insulted. You name my child without asking me what name I want? So he went over to his father-in-law and he said, Rebbe, I don't understand. You made me wait for 4 hours. And then you give Stam a name. Who's Yehuda Leib? I never heard of him. Not my grandfather, not my father, not my great-grandfather. What kind of name is this Yehuda Leib? So Rav Yitzchak Levi told him the following story. He said, when I came in to the bris, I noticed on my way that there was a black cloud in the sky. And there was like rumbling in this cloud. And I never saw such a cloud. So after davening, I went to my room to look out the window and see if the cloud is still there. And the cloud was still there. And I wanted to see what was going on, so I went into a trance, into my Ruach HaKodesh. Rav Levi Mibaditchev was a very big person. And I wanted to see what was going on, and he said, I saw that a person died today here in Europe. His name was Yehuda Leib, Rabbi Yehuda Leib. And he was on this cloud. His neshama was on this cloud. And the tzaddikim from the other world were coming down from Gan Eden to pick him up, to bring him to the next world. As it says, the tzaddikim, when they die, they're malava. The tzaddikim come out of Gan Eden and they come to bring him up to Gan Eden. And it's brought down. Brought down that even a tzaddik, when he has to go, when he goes to heaven, when he goes to Gan Eden, he has to go through Gehenna. Are we disconnected? Hold on. We can still connect it. Okay, anyway, so He has to go through, the biggest tzaddik has to go through Gehenna. Gehenna is the place where the fires are. I don't have to name it, right? It's hello without the O. Anyway, so they made a bridge. There's a bridge, because the tzaddik doesn't have to actually go through the fire, but he has to go sort of over Gehenna, a little bit through Gehenna, to get to Gan Eden. Nobody can go straight to Gan Eden. Everybody has to go Derech Gehenna, it's called. The way of Gehenna. Why? Why does a tzaddik have to go the way of Gehenna? It's a very big mussar for us. Because the tzaddik has to see that there are other Jews suffering. And if he would have been maybe a little bit more of a tzaddik, maybe he would have saved one of those Jews. So he has to see them suffering. And he has to have a pang of a little bit suffering that other Jews are in Gehenna. We, even if they were bad, they did every avera in the world. Maybe if we would have done another mitzvah, they wouldn't be in Gehenna. He said, and this rabbi that died, this Rabbi Yehuda Leib from Apta, that died as a tzaddikim, we're taking him through Gehenna, over Gehenna, to bring him to Gan Eden. He jumped off the bridge into Gehenna, into the fires. And the minute he jumped into the fires, they had to turn the fires off. Because a tzaddik can't be in Gehenna. And they turn the fires off. And the malach of Gehenna, who works for the Sadan, said, Rabbi, get out of my Gehenna. I want to turn on back my fires. I want the people to suffer. Get out of my Gehenna. And this rabbi said, this Yehuda Leib from Apta said, I'm not walking out of Gehenna until I take the Jewish souls that are here in Gehenna with me to Gan Eden. The rabbi, we don't make these kind of deals over here. He says, I'm not making a deal. I'm telling you a fact. I promise I'm not leaving Gehenna until I take souls with me to heaven. The malach didn't know what to do. He's got this rabbi making this statement. He can't turn on the fires. If he's going to sit there and argue, he's not going to be able to turn on fires. So he says, okay, you know what? I'm going to go to Hashem. And I'm going to tell Hashem what you did. So it says the malach went to Hashem in front of the Kisei HaKavod. He said, Hashem, this Yehuda Leib me'apta. He jumped into my Gehenna. God, I turned off Gehenna. There's no fire. So Hashem said, well, what did he say? He said he made a promise. He's not leaving Gehenna until he takes other people with him. So Hashem said, we have to keep a promise of a tzaddik. But only if this Yehuda Leib never, ever in his whole life lied. Because we can't make him into a liar. If he's a person that his whole life never said a lie, now he made a promise that he's not leaving until he takes people with him. If we force him out of there without people, we made him into a liar. In Shemayim, we can't make someone into a liar. Unless he was a liar on this world. Because if you're a liar on this world, you're a liar on that world. It's a scary thing. But the way a person is in this world, that's the way you are in that world. Famous story of this Jew who went to an inn with all his money. And he was scared that they might steal it, so he hid it. He hid it in a closet somewhere. And came Motzei Shabbat. He went to take his money out. It was gone. And he was beyond himself. He lost all his money. He went to sleep Motzei Shabbos in a dream. He had a dream, and in a dream they came. They said, Tzaddik, your money, the owner of the inn, the hotel, he took your money, and he hid it in his father's grave, in the back of the inn. The Jewish guy woke up the next morning. It's not working?
It's on now. We have to connect it. It's like hanging from you.
Okay, yeah. We'll find it. Here it is. Okay. So he woke up the next morning, and he didn't go to the owner of the inn. He went... No, that's the wrong place. Oh, here it is. Okay, I got it. So he didn't go to the owner of the inn. He went straight to the graveyard in the morning, and he dug up next to the father's grave, and he found his money. And he went to the owner, the non-Jewish person who owned the inn, and he said, how did you know where my money was hidden? And why did you bury it in your father's grave? And the owner of the inn said, Friday night I had a dream. and my father came from the next world, the Goyish father came from the next world, and he told me that you had money here, and he told me where it was, and he told me to bury it by the grave. It's a famous story. So the rabbi said, I don't understand, your father's dead. He's in the other world. He sees the truth. He sees the truth. He's in the other world. How can he tell you to steal? He knows the truth. He knows the person's not supposed to steal. He's in the other world. How can he come to you in a dream and tell you to steal if he's already in the other world? He said, what did your father do for a living? He said, my father was a thief. So even though he came to the next world and he sees the truth, you can't change. He's still a thief. You can't change yourself. It's brought down in Kabbalah that what a person enjoys in this world is his Gan Eden in the next world. And it talks about a wagon driver whose whole life was to have a beautiful horse and a beautiful wagon. That was his whole life. He was a wagon driver and to fix his wheels and to make grease his wheels and make it a little bit faster. When he came to the next world, he was a rusher. He had done not good in his life, but he had done some good. So what was his reward? His reward was forever and ever to be in a wagon going around and around and around. You write your own epitaph. You write what's going to be in the next world. So what you are in this world, that's what you are in the next world. I was asked to speak with a shul out of town where they had a major. It's not working? All right, what can you do? It's not meant to be. We'll just have to go on.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. Or anytime. Anyway, so I was asked to speak in the shul. There was a very big problem out of town that there was a lot of talking during davening on Shabbos. The women were talking on their side, the men were talking on their side. The rabbi called me up. He said, Rabbi Wallerstein, I need you to come to my shul. It's a plague. And no matter how many times I get up and speak, it doesn't work. And I brought in rabbis to speak, and they laugh. They don't take it seriously. I said, what do you think I could say that everyone else didn't say? The Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to talk. All the halachas of tefillah say you're not allowed to talk. What am I going to tell them? Some chiddush, something new that's going to stop your shul from talking? He said, I don't know, but I hear you're pretty tough. I want you to come in and I want you to talk. I was preparing this and preparing that. I was trying to figure out what to say. Everything they heard already. And then all of a sudden Hashem sent me an idea. I think, anyway. So, I got up in front of the shul and I said the following. It was a 12-minute speech. And Baruch Hashem, it was 3 years ago, and that shul does not talk one word. And I'll tell you what I told them. I said, I'd like to describe everyone in this room what your Gehenna and what your hell is. You're all sitting there. Whoa! I said, I'm going to tell you, everybody in this room, what your Gehenna is. It was a women and men. It was a shiur for women and men. I said, I'll tell you the following. You think Gehenna is you're going to go to some fire, 11 months, they're going to pull you out, and you're going to sit in Gan Eden, you know, sipping some drinks and, you know, taking a suntan. I said, I'm going to tell you what your Gehenna is. Person who talks by davening, well, first of all, a person has to know like this. It's brought down in Kabbalah, and I'm not going into this subject a lot tonight because it's brought down in the Reishis Chachma, Sechtes Gehenim, which is a very scary thing to learn. I'm not advising anyone here to learn it. And he says that the embarrassment in the next world of what you did in this world is a person's Gehenim. When a person turns red, right, when somebody insults you, you turn red, you feel flushed. There's a certain heat on your face that you feel. That's a sample of the Gehenim in the next world, which is called the Gehenim of embarrassment. Now, the embarrassment in the next world is forever. It's not like here you get embarrassed and then you crawl into your closet, you know, or you go somewhere else and it's over. It's loilam void. You're embarrassed forever. No one in this room understands what that word means because we don't know what forever means. Because forever is more than anyone in this room could understand. But if you could understand that someone took a straw and he had to drink all the water in the whole world, how long that would take, that's not forever. If a person had to take a grain of sand at a time and empty all the sand that's in the whole world, however long that would take, a couple of billion years, it's not forever. The next world is forever. Because a moment in the next world, there's no time in the next world. So there's a time is a finite thing. It begins at a certain point and it ends at a certain point. So if you're embarrassed for an hour, you're embarrassed from here till here. If you're embarrassed for a year, you're embarrassed from here to here. But we know that there is no time in the next world. So there's no this, and there's no this. It's just forever. And the busha, the embarrassment of a person in the next world, is something that's called Gehenna. It's a fire that burns the person from within emotionally. Because the other world is emotion, it's not physical. So it's not like they drop you into a fire. It's an emotional fire, which anyone who has ever been in pain inside their heart knows it's worse than any other fire in the world. So he brings down that when a person speaks about someone else or speaks in shul, when they walk in the next world, now you have to know another thing, that what you look like here is what you look like there. Because the neshama, the life force of a human being, is a perfect match, it's a perfect shadow of the human being. And one rabbi once told me to put my hand, I think, on a white paper, and you can see around your fingers there's energy, there's like a fuzz. I think if you put it on white paper or on black paper, I don't remember what he made me do, but you can see there's a fuzz and around a person's face. The tzaddik can see by the illumination around a person's face of how big a tzaddik he is. So what you look like here, you look like there. That's why when a person dreams of someone coming from the next world, they see that person. It's not like they see a fire or they see a talus. They see that person because that's what you look like in the other world. But, and it's also in Gilgal, everyone's like worried. You know, I'm really good looking this time. And like when Mashiach comes, am I going to look like what she looked like 2,000 years ago? Maybe I wasn't good looking. Maybe I was short. Maybe that, right? Gilgal, you look every single time you come back, you look exactly the same. So when Mashiach comes, the body that you know now, the face that you know now, that's going to be the same face. In Gilgal 2,000 years ago, you looked exactly, you maybe didn't have the sheitel and you're like that, and you didn't have makeup, and you were wearing what they were wearing 2,000 years ago, right? You were dressed like that, but you as a person was exactly the same. In every Gilgal person comes back, they look exactly the same. There's no change, and that's why I'm going totally off the subject, but that's why sometimes you meet a person who you never saw before and you're like, I know her from somewhere. Because she, what they call deja vu, which is silly because there's no such thing outside of the real world, but that person, Taka, looks like she looked 2,000 years ago and you may have known her, and therefore when you see that face, even though you never met her this time, you met it 2,000 years ago. That's in the Sefer Gulgulin. You don't change. The person doesn't change. Looks exactly the same. There's no two snowflakes alike.
But with people, can actually have the same genetic component and a different generation. How's that?
Physically.
Impossible.
That's Gilgul. Because Gilgul, they're spiritually the same. The spiritual body and the physical body are exactly alike. Exactly alike. What? Look at pictures of who?
Yeah.
A Gilgal could be from 2,000 years ago. You could have been in Iraq for the last 800 years and then in a chicken, and you could have been chased around for 2,000 years, whatever. There are Gilgalim that are people here that, you know, from in this generation that were in the Holocaust. There are people here that were in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. There are people here from the beginning of Bereishis time. There are some old Gilgalim, there are some young Gilgalim. A person's age is not really his age. I used to be study with a very big tzaddik, Machluf Lasri. And he would say that this neshama, when a person would walk in, he would say, this neshama is much older than my neshama, or this neshama, the other neshama. We don't know. This is not my subject matter tonight. But he brings down that in the next world, a person who speaks Lashon Hara or talks by davening, when they walk around the next world, they have a long tongue. A long tongue. And they have to schlep it on the ground, and it's black. And everyone who sees it knows, Oive! That person on the other world used their tongue for the wrong reason. Yeah, it's very scary. If you really read the what he says, I'm not going to go through the whole subject, but what it says, if a person has a very long ear and they know that they listen to Lashon Hara, or Chas V'Shalom eyes that are not in their sockets, that this person looked at things that they were not supposed to, and there's a busha because everybody can see it, and she can't hide. She can't hide. There's nowhere to hide. That's Gehenna. That's Gehenna. That embarrassment, that's Gehenna. And any aver, any organ of a person that they used incorrectly, that's for everybody to see. And everyone to know that that person did an avera. And of course, you can do tshuva. Hashem allows a person to do tshuva. And it's called malbushim, spiritual clothing. And by doing mitzvahs, a person gets spiritual clothing. And by looking at the talus and the clothing that a person wears in the next world, you know everything that they did in this world. And there's one cloak that covers all. That even though underneath this cloak, the person's organs, whatever they did wrong, right? People could see what they did wrong. This cloak totally covers the whole person. And that's called the cloak of Emunah. A person who believes in Hashem, who really believes in Hashem, he is rewarded to have this cloak that covers all his Eivarim so that he's not embarrassed. But what I told these people is as follows. They're not going to be scared of warm tongues that are turning black. We'll deal with it. I told them the following. I said, all you people that are sitting in this shul that talk all the time, one day you're not going to be here anymore. 120 years, you're going to be in the next world. Your great-granddaughter, or your granddaughter, or Chas Hashem, you'll die young, your daughter, going to come to your kever, going to come to your grave, and she's going to say, Bobby, I'm going out for so many years and I can't find the shidduch. Please, go to Hashem and daven for me. You're such a tzaddikista. Bobby, I don't have children, 15 years. You're such a tzaddikist to go in front of Hashem, Zaidi. You did so many mitzvahs. Go in front of Hashem, my husband can't make a living. And that Bobby and Zaidi and Shemayim, when they see their granddaughter crying at their grave, or their great-granddaughter, or their daughter, they're going to get up, and they're going to say, I must run to Hashem. My granddaughter's suffering. I need to pray, I need to ask Him for help. The Malachim will turn to her and say, you want to pray to Hashem? You should have prayed to Hashem when you were on earth. You were talking. You have no mouth. You have no lips. You can't talk to Hashem. You disgraced Hashem when it was time to talk to Him. You talked to your friends. Go find a friend to talk to. Go tell your friend about your granddaughter's problems. But you can't talk to Hashem. I said to the people that were sitting in that shul, you want to know what's Gehenna? Gehenna is sitting in the next world when your granddaughter, your grandson comes to pray that you should go to Hashem and you can't do anything. And you have no mouth and no words to bring in front of Hashem. I said, I want to know who in this room is so mean and so selfish that you're willing to take away your power of prayer in the next world because you got to talk to the lady next to you. That you're willing to give up your power of helping your daughter, your granddaughter, your great-granddaughter, your great-great-granddaughter, whoever comes to your kever for help. Is anyone in this room that selfish? And that was the end of my speech. And that was the end of the talking. Thank you. The reason that I have this chus of the young lady that just started clapping, because she has, I know where it is. The reason, because Shirley for the last 2 months has come to me after the shir and said, Rabbi Wallerstein, why don't you talk about the women who speak in shul? I can't go to shul anymore. They're young girls, they're talking, they're busy with themselves, they don't let me daven. Please get up and speak about it. So the schus of anyone that's listening on Kol Lashon or on Torah anytime or anyone in this room that will stop talking, the reason I'm speaking about it tonight is because Shirley has been bothering me and asking me to do it. So you should clap for her. Okay. Let's continue. Shh. We're not talking Lashon Hara anyway. Let's continue with the story. So, they check him out, and they see that Yehuda Leib never said a lie. So Hashem said, you got to give him souls to take, because we can't make him a liar in this world if he didn't lie in our world. And the Malach said, well, how many do I have to give him? Hashem said, as many souls as that he saved when he was alive, he has a right to save when he's dead. And therefore, they checked out how many souls he had saved, and he had saved 220. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheyiftachu ha-pinchas, open up the accounting book and see how many he saved. And what's in Messiah and Esther, and they found he saved 220 Jews. So the Malach said to Rabbi Yehuda Leib, go, come on, let's go. We got to turn the fires back on. Go get you 220 Jews. And he went to the seventh level of Gehenna. There are seven levels in hell, in Gehenna. And the bottom is called the Tehoim. And from there, nobody ever gets out. There's no Kaddish, there's no Mishnayis, there's nothing that can help you. You're down in the Tehoim, you're done. Who's in the Tehoim? Hitler Yimach Shemo is in the Tehoim. Bilam's in the Tehoim. You know, those people are in the Tehoim. They're never going to get out. But there's never some Jews down there too. So Rabbi Yehuda Leib said to himself, I'm going to take the Jews that are in the other levels. They're going to have Kaddish. They're going to get out. One day they're going to get out. I'm going to go take 220 from the bottom. So he went to the seventh level of Gehenna. And he took 440. That's my kind of guy. Tell him 220, he takes 440. So he comes to the gate. And the Malach standing there. And the Malach says, God said 220. And you can't take 440. And Yehuda Leib said, I'm not leaving unless I have my 440 souls. So he went back to Hashem. And Hashem said, now we don't have to go with this prompt, you know, never lying bit. But we need to see if he was, when he saved 220 Jews, was he satisfied and he stopped? Or because he died, and because I didn't give him more money to save more Jews, that's why he stopped. And they checked it out, and they saw that on his deathbed, he was crying to Hashem, and he said, I don't mind dying. It's not about leaving this world and not eating cholent anymore, and not seeing my family anymore, and not smelling the roses anymore. But I don't want to die because there's still people who need my help. So he wasn't satisfied with the amount of Jews he saved. So Hashem said, since I took his soul, I took his life, but if he was alive, he would have saved more. He could take 440. And he walked out of Gehenna with 440 Jewish souls. And they turned back on Gehenna. So he says, we see from here the power of the mouth. That a person on this world, if he uses his mouth correctly, then he taka has the power in the next world to daven for Klal Yisrael, for other people. But if you abuse your mouth in this world, no matter how, what you do, you're not going to have a mouth in the next world. So that's the part of the parasha, the beginning of the parasha that talks about speaking. Now we'll get to the good stuff. So I was asked to speak on Monday night in Queens on a subject called Shmiras Einayim, person watching what they look at. Summertime, of course, is a time of preetzus. Everybody's wild, everybody's not dressed, everybody's free, you're not in school, you don't belong to nothing. It's a wild time. It's a very wild time, July and August. So I thought, you know what? It's a good subject to talk about. This week's parasha, the end of the parasha, when Klal Yisrael, when the Jewish nation was about to go into Israel, it says the following: Umikne Rav Hayu Livnei Ruven Livnei Gad. The shaman of Ruven and Gad had a lot of money, a lot of cattle, and they told Moshe Rabbeinu, "We don't want to go into Israel. We have beautiful land. We want to stay outside of Israel." Imagine after the whole dying from the spies and the Meraglim. Right? After everything they learned, there's still money is crazy. Money has an amazing power. And the Torah says that they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, we want to live here. We want to build houses for our barns, for our animals, and houses for our families. Moshe Rabbeinu said, look what money did to you. First, you're interested in building houses for your animals and then for your families. So people buy a house, right? They look at the house like, nice pool, that's good. There's room for my BMW, my Mercedes in the driveway, that's also good. We got a big screening room downstairs to watch our movies, that's also good. Right? The kitchen, we're going to make all the last thing is your kids' rooms. Okay, kids' rooms, who cares? A little small, a little bigger, that's not important. She says, over here, you see that the money, they were so into their money that they first asked Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to build for our cattle, a garage, you know, for our cattle, and then we want to build for the human being, because money has a very, very big koyach. We know that money has a very big power. The famous story, Chofetz Chaim, I love this story. He gave a whole schmooze and he got up and he said, God owns everything, and if he wants, he can take away all your money in 1 second. And there's one guy in the crowd, very, very wealthy man. He owned 50 banks in 50 different countries. 50 different countries and 50 different banks. And he was very respectful. He went up to the Chafetz Chaim and said, "Rabbi, good speech, but you're wrong. God cannot take all my money away in a second. It can't be that 50 banks in 50 different countries are going to go bankrupt. It might take 2 days, it might take 2 weeks, but he can't do it in 1 second." He said, "Rabbi, I'm that rich." And the Chafetz Chaim looked at the man, he says, "You misunderstood me." He says, "Who says that God has to take away all your money in 1 second? God could take you away in 1 second. Who says Hashem has to take the money away from you? Hashem can take you away from the money. All your 50 banks, if you're dead, they're not yours anymore. 1 second, a heart attack, a stroke, a car hits you, 1 second, and all your money's gone. Yes, Hashem can take all your money in 1 second. Because nothing in this world belongs to us." And the Medrash says, Shloishim atanas nivru ba'olam. There were three presents God gave. Zocha ba'achas. If you have one of them, you have the whole world. Zocha b'chachma. If you're wise and you took that present, you have all. If you have strength, inner strength, gevura, you have all. If you have money, you have all. And the question is, what are you talking about? If you have money, you have all. We always learn that money is not important. Strength is not important. Wisdom is not important. Shlomo HaMelech said, what's the proof that wisdom is not important? Most the wisest people in the world are the poorest. They're teaching. They're sitting and inventing. They're not making any money. The people are making the money, half of them can't sign their name, they can't even read. So he proves God that wisdom doesn't make money. So what are you saying over here? So the Medrash continues, the Medrash says, no. A person who has chachma, who has wisdom, and knows it's not his, knows it's all from God, that's a person who's zaycha to everything. A person who has money and knows it's not his, that's a person who has everything. A person who has strength, inner strength, and power, and knows it's not his, that's a person who's zaycha to everything. And then he brings proofs of people who didn't know. And he brings that Bilam, and he brings down different Shimshon had power, his koyach, but he lost it. And he brings down all the people that lost it, that had all these three things. So what the Medrash is trying to tell us is that nothing belongs to us. And that's so true. Nothing belongs. How do you know nothing belongs to you? How do you know your eyes don't belong to you? Because you can become blind in 2 seconds. How do you know your ears don't belong to you? Because you can become deaf in 2 seconds. How do you know your life doesn't belong to you? Because Hashem can take you away from this world in 2 seconds. If it's yours, can't take it away. So the proof that nothing is yours is that everything can be taken away from you. Everything. Hashem can take everything away from you. So taka, nothing belongs to us. So now, if nothing belongs to you, and you understand that, then it's a matana. It's a present. A present is a different relationship. When I think it's mine, get out of here. Hashem, you gave me a present? That's a relationship between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One of the greatest presents that a human being is given is a person's eyes. Is the ability to see, as I told you, and nobody came back to me with emails, is to go home and spend an hour walking around your house tonight with your eyes closed. And see what it feels like. And then when you open them, you'll understand the precious, precious thing of eyesight. And I guarantee you that nobody goes an hour without opening them. Because you'll open them just to make sure that you really could see, and then you'll close them again. But you can't walk around with an hour with your eyes closed. Eyesight, one of the greatest presents that is given to us. And the scary part about eyesight is that the eyes of a person, it says in Kabbalah, are the windows to a person's soul. Not your ears. Not your mouth, not your nose, your eyes are the windows to your soul. And anything that goes in your eyes can never be forgotten. Because your eyes are like that camera. And anything you've ever seen is in your brain and in your soul. And you can't erase it unless you do tshuva. And I'll help you with it tonight a little bit. And I remember when I was 10 years old, I was playing football and I fell on my head and I went unconscious, and I remember clearly that I saw my whole life in front of me. I saw my whole life. From when I was born, everything that I ever saw in my eyes, I saw in my head. And when I finally woke up, I said to my father, because I was playing with him and I had fallen on my head, and I said to my father, "Wow, how long was I out? A day, 2 days?" He said, 2 minutes. Oh my God. 2 minutes. And I saw everything that my eye ever saw. And you know what, girls? Everything that your eye ever saw when you die, they're going to play every single thing your eye ever took in. Because your eyes are the windows to your soul. It's a camera. It's a camera. So everything you look at and you're like, well, let me just look at this picture. Okay, I'm not looking at it anymore. It's there. It's done. That's the satam. It's in. It's in. It's in your brain. It's in your soul. It's there. That's why Shmiras Einayim, the Kedusha, one of the people that I go to, Rav David Abba Chatzera, and the whole Abba Chatzera family, and the famous Abba Chatzera, their whole Kedusha is their Shmiras Einayim. Everybody knows that. Baba Sali's Kedusha was that he never talked to a woman. He never looked at a girl. You know, my wife many times wanted to go, come on, take me to Rav David Abba Chatzera. Rav David Abba Chatzera doesn't talk to women. Not because he's mean and he's evil, because their whole Kedusha is that they don't look at women. A person's eyes is the absolute window to a person's soul, and if the window's dirty, then nothing else can come in. If the window's filthy, the sunshine can't come in. And nothing comes out of your eyes. Your eyes only take in. Shmiras Einayim has a huge effect on a human being. And in Israel, they were teaching the bus drivers, because they had these Arabs that were getting on to blow up buses, they were getting on dressed as Hasidim, and they were getting on dressed as Jews. And how could you tell the difference? And they said, look at their eyes. An Arab's eyes is very different than Jewish eyes. Our eyes are much more round. They can't fake their eyes. They can fake everything. They can put on whatever they want. They can grow payas and a beard, whatever they want. What's his name? Usama Baba. He looks like a rebbe. He's got a long beard. He looks more religious than me. Right? He's got a long beard. Looks like he has payas even. He looks like really religious. Right? He does. He looks like a chacham. The havdil, that Russia. You can look up, but his eyes, check out his eyes. Look at his eyes. I did this 5 years ago. I went out and I bought rappers, you know, rappers, not gum rappers, but you know, the black culture rappers, their music. And I bought a couple of the magazines with pictures of them. And I wanted to show the girls the difference between the eyes of a tzaddik and the eyes of a rapper. And I took pictures of Rav Moshe and Rav Pam. I took pictures of kids in yeshiva, little Hasidish kids in Yerushalayim. And I said, I'm not giving a shit tonight. I'm passing around these pictures. And that's it. I want you to see the difference of that culture and our culture. And why would you want to be in that culture? But a guy standing there with gold teeth, with hatred in his eyes. Hatred. Evil. And then look at Rav Pam's eyes. Why? Why would anyone want to be in that world? I'm sorry that I didn't bring it here tonight. A Jew's eyes is the most precious thing. I want to read you. I'm sorry that this is a little bit scary, but you need to know this. From the Kava Yosha, Perik Beis, and he says the following. He brings it down from the Zoyar, Pashas Pekudei, if you ever want to look it up. Daf, Reish, Samach, Gimel, Omid Beis, but don't read it at night, because it's very scary. And he says the following. Ki yesh memuna echad shenikra patois. There's a malach out there. And the angel's name, he's a bad malach, and his name is Patos. Why does he have a name like Patos? Hashem Shehu Mefatel Ibnei Nasha. Because he talks it into people. Girls and boys the same. To look and think about things that they shouldn't. Bekamani Ufim Uznunim. And many immoral pictures of things that they shouldn't look at. And he tells you, look at this picture, watch this movie. Don't worry about it, it's not going to affect you. Check out this picture on the internet. Check out this, check out that. It's not a big deal. It's a picture. You're not doing anything. You're just looking at something. Big deal. That's what he tells you. After a person dies, after 120 years, v'nikba b'kever, and they put the person in the grave. They buried him. They put the sand. They pat everything down. And they're going to the Shiva house. And everybody's lighting candles in the Shiva house. And learning Mishnayos. And the soul of the person who died is there. We know that for those 7 days, the soul is there. Says the Zoyar, Bahamuna Hahu, this angel comes. Umachsil Ha'adam Nishmasai. He goes to the Shiva house and he takes the soul out.